Good evening, welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, Mamata Banerjee meets Sonia Gandhi and Arvind Kejriwal. Now, we've seen all this before, but with the stopwatch winding down to the elections and post her dominant performance in Bengal, the question does remain, can Mamata bridge the opposition divide? Next on the show, the former Foreign Secretary Nirupama Rao joins me as we discuss the visit of the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken to India. What is the overriding message, as Secretary Blinken affirms, that the bedrock of the relationship between India and the US are democratic ideals ahead of the strategic equation, economic ties or anything else? What's the message Washington is trying to send us and why? And finally, on tonight's one-hour show, my colleague Maya Sharma's interview with the new Karnataka Chief Minister, B.S. Bommai. But first, a big political story. In her efforts to build an anti-BJP coalition, the West Bengal Chief Minister, Mamata Banerjee, who's on a five-day visit to Delhi, met several opposition leaders, including the Congress president. Is this the beginning of an opposition front? Have we not heard that many times in the past? And what role does Mamata Banerjee see of herself going forward?
Mamata Banerjee with Sonia Gandhi. Rivals in West Bengal, but now a show of unity as the West Bengal leader caps off her Delhi trip meant to galvanize the anti-BJP opposition. Emerging from the meeting, Ms. Banerjee was vague about specifics but said it was a positive meeting.
Sonia ji invited me for a cup of tea. Rahul ji is also there. So we met. We discussed the political situation in general. And also we discuss about Pegasus to COVID situation, positive meeting. I think the positive. Dekhiye, BJP ko harane ke liye sabko ek hona zaruri hai.
But beyond the photo ops, opposition synergies remain uneven. Both the TMC and the Congress are protesting separately inside and outside Parliament on the Pegasus spyware scandal. Even in the joint presser by 14 opposition parties headed by Congress, Trinamool Congress was missing.
There is also this question of who will lead the anti-BJP front. When asked at the press interaction whether she fancies herself as the leader, Mamata Banerjee said she is just a political worker, not an astrologer, and it depends on the time.
After meeting with Gandhi's, Ms. Banerjee also met Delhi Chief Minister Arvind Kejriwal, another strong constituent of anti-BJP bloc. Even in the 2020 assembly elections in Delhi, TMC had thrown its weight behind Aam Aadmi Party.
Mamata Banerjee's Delhi visit has caught the headlines. But will it help to build a strong coalition to unseat BJP in 2024? It needs more than these photo-off meetings. With camera person Xavier, this is Arvind Gunasekar for NDTV.
All right, so is this the beginning of a serious effort at consolidating opposition parties and leaders in this country, or is this more talk which will result in little action on the ground? Joining us, Professor Om Prakash Mishra of the Trinamool Congress, Saurabh Bhardwaj of the Aam Aadmi Party, Veerappa Moily, the senior Congress leader, and Thopali Srinivas of the BJP. Professor Om Prakash Mishra, let me come to you first. If there is to be an opposition front, how soon do you see the contours of it emerging? Because we've seen talk now for so many months, it's not really come to very much.
Thank you very much for an important question. We have to prepare ourselves. Of course, the elections are far away. It is in 2024. And much before that, there will be many state elections that opposition parties shall be negotiating. Hopefully, they will be negotiating very well. And to the extent that the opposition unity is concerned, that is now going to be solid, because we are fighting together in relationship to positive agenda, and positive agenda is in favor of the constitutional democracy in the country and to chart out a course for the economic resurgence of the country.
Okay.
And it is in this extent that the Trinamool Congress is going to play a contributory role. Our role is supplementary, complementary. And we would like to...
Okay, so I'll come back to what you mean by complimentary in a moment.
Call.
But Veerappa Moily, let me ask you this question. Can there be an opposition front without a Congress leader heading it, spearheading it?
you know, this kind of a thinking is very negative. You know, when you, you know, it's good that, you know, the opposition parties and opposition is trying to form an opposition front all over the country. This has to be with the mutual respect and dignity. It is not to undermine some other party's interest for the sake of the other political interest. So whatever the agenda we have, we should have a common minimum program. There should be a basic common understanding that can unite the opposition together.
But Mr. Moily, who's going to be the leader?
The BJP.
Would you in the Congress be willing exactly to accept a leader who's BJP, not in the Congress?
At the same time, you know, it should be a democratic, secular friend to uphold the constitutional basic constitutional sure. rights and basic constitutional.
But Mr. Moily, respectfully, I'm just trying to understand. You know, when we talk about an opposition front, it's a given that your ideals are that of secularism and all that. But I'm just trying to understand, in a country which has seen elections being won around one dominant political face, in this case, Narendra Modi, over the last couple of elections, none of you would argue that he's not been a big, huge face who's sort of spearheaded the BJP for a victory. Who is that opposition leader who can actually take him on? Could that for you, Mr. Moily, be somebody other than Rahul Gandhi? Mr. Moily? Can you hear me, sir? He can't hear me for some reason. Let me go across to Saurabh Bhardwaj and ask him that same question. You have a very strong leader in Arvind Kejriwal. Would you be willing to accept a potential prime ministerial pick who's not in your party?
Today's meeting with Mamata Banerjee was related to the current political situation in the country and about the opposition unity with respect to the burning issues like Pegasus scooping. And it was a usual meeting. We have had a warm relationship with Mamata Banerjee and her party. And she's a respectable figure, but there was no, this meeting had nothing to do with any future election alliances or anything. But it was about opposition unity as far as these current issues are concerned. Pegasus was discussed and how opposition should unite against the central government, against its hostility.
But Saurabh, surely there would have been discussion on the biggest political issue of the day. And I'm sorry, that's not Pegasus, it's perhaps the UP elections, and someone would say the national elections. So what did Arvind ji discuss with Mamata ji? And don't tell me you don't know, you do.
No, Vishnu, I know. And what I know is that it was a usual discussion between the two chief ministers who are coming from opposition parties. But it had nothing to do with the future elections. No elections were discussed.
Okay. Let me come across to Thopali Srinivas. Sir, as you see the very initial stages of the opposition coming together, I mean, Mamata Banerjee is in Delhi for 5 days. She's met Kejriwal. She's met Sonia Gandhi. She'll be meeting other leaders as well. Rahul Gandhi, she's also met. Do you see the formation of the beginnings of the formation of a front which could challenge you in the election?
Vishnu, I would like to attack this question with two parts. She said, "Khela hobe."
Yes, she did.
According to me, it is goalpost hobe. Because the reason is very simple. After the poll, there are post-poll violence and positions, and NHRC has done a lot of backbiting there. There is a lot of BJP cadre being killed on a day and night basis. And the third thing is that the problem in West Bengal is very, very dire. Borrowing is reaching to 5,25,000.
No, but sir, I am not sure you're asking, you're answering my question. I'm asking you about whether you see this as a serious challenge.
Vishnu, if I attack this in the second part, in a cricket parlance, if I say, hardly 15 overs have been bowled, how can you declare yourself a winner?
So it's too early, right?
It's
that's
too
what
early.
You're saying. All right. I want to go back to Mr. Veerappa Moily because I think we've got his line back. Mr. Moily, can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, I can now hear.
Great. So, Mr. Moily, I was asking whether
I can hear you.
In the event of an eventual opposition front, would the Congress Party be willing to see a leader, possibly a prime ministerial pick, being somebody other than Rahul Gandhi or anybody in the Congress?
No, no, we cannot have the elimination process. You know, now the question is that is only the, now the formation of the opposition front is only in the initial stage.
Right.
You know, a lot of basic understandings will have to be arrived. And that should be a common minimum program.
Right.
We have challenges like the state elections in the north and also the thereafter the parliament election. So we have to start the preparation right now, for which each of the political party will have a basic understanding first, have proper discussions and consensus, then come out. You cannot have a, you know, cart before the horse. You know, you should have a cart first, and you have the proper architecture for that, for the opposition parties to unite together. It's not that easy, because, you know, after all, there are regional parties, the national parties, and they have their own interests. These interests among themselves may also clash. So that is why I think the beginning is very good. I welcome this move. But, you know, in the beginning itself, you cannot conclude on, you know, issues will have to be thrown open. And after throwing open these issues, the necessary, you know, the corollary should come. And it is the right time that the opposition...
Okay, so you feel at the right time the question of leadership will be decided
to put forth the program.
Okay, so let me go back to Professor Mishra. Mamata Banerjee was also asked the issue of leadership. She said she's not an astrologer. So even if she is not an astrologer in terms of defining what her role in terms of the leadership of an opposition front could be, is she any clearer to knowing what her role is in terms of bringing this opposition front together? Will she be the convener of this opposition front? Is that a possible role?
Vishnu, I would tend to agree with Veerappa Moily ji that this question about the face or who would be leader, this is the least of our worries. In fact, right now the focus is on building up a coalition of the willing. All those opposition political parties who would like to come together and collectively express our resolve with regard to the opposition to the BJP RSS and at the same time chart out a positive agenda. Mamata ji is a national leader. She has been 7-time Lok Sabha Member of Parliament. She has served the councillor minister with 3 prime ministers. She is a 3rd-time chief minister. She herself is very clear about her role, that she is not here to assume a role of dominance or of leadership, but rather it is the bridge building, it is the reconciliation, it is cooperation, it is a win-win. That is the symmetry that
so
we would
it's
like
important,
to achieve,
Professor
and that
Mishra,
is what Mamata ji has said.
That you mentioned this, because I just want to know, are we, for once and for all, through with the phase of some opposition parties saying that they are looking to form an opposition front without the Congress? Is there now a recognition that without the Congress, you cannot have a viable opposition front?
I'm very sorry. You know, the entire country is talking about our leader, Mamata Banerjee, Chief Minister of West Bengal, meeting the Congress President, Honorable Sonia Gandhi ji, today, and in which Rahul ji was also present. So therefore, it is all very much clear that the opposition that we are talking about is the of all the political parties who are fundamentally opposite to the BJP. And so therefore that does not exclude. As Moily ji was saying, it is not about exclusion, it is about inclusion.
Right.
And
well,
that is what
a big
we
step
would
forward.
Like to harp on, and that is what
that's a big step forward, Mishra ji. That was not discussions were set even a few months back when people were talking about a non-Congress opposition front. After all, you fought against the Congress in the West Bengal elections, which, let me take my last question across to Saurabh. How do you see this progressing? Because in as much as you would all say that, look, don't put the cart before the horse, in the context of elections in India, where political personalities are so very important, who is, I'll come back to the key question, how soon do you think, you know, you will have to decide who that one prime ministerial face or that one leadership face will be. Because in the absence of that, it's going to be a big challenge. I mean, we all know you're secular, right? Those values can be sorted out. A common minimum program with that bedrock is not going to be that difficult to form. It's going to be about running a coalition and leading it.
Vishnu, what I think is that if we start from north towards south, BJP has been losing most of its allies. You start with PDP in Kashmir, they lost it. They lost Akalis in Punjab. They are losing their allies in Bihar. Nitish Kumar is not happy with them. Even in he lost Chandrababu Naidu in Andhra. So I think there are a lot of allies which are not with BJP. Plus, there are a lot of opposition parties which were fundamentally opposite to BJP. So I think the road ahead is full of challenges for BJP. And this kind of opposition unity is a welcome step.
So, Professor Mishra, last word to you. 30 seconds. Pure desh mein khela hoga. Is that, that's what she said. Pure desh mein khela hoga.
Yeah, see, the khela hoga hove is about cooperation.
Pure desh mein khela hoga.
About competition. I suppose so, and this is how we are starting out.
Okay.
And you know, we should not ask questions which are hypothetical. Now, for example, is it sure that the BJP would not consider Mr. Modi as a liability instead of an asset in 2024? It may be that they might be projecting a different leader. And in any case, we are not a presidential system of government. We are basically 543 electoral constituency in the Lok Sabha. So therefore, right now, we would like to focus on the opposition unity.
Okay.
We would like to
focus on the opposition unity. I'm only interrupting
agenda.
You because I want to give the last word to Mr. Srinivasa. Go ahead, 30 seconds before I move on.
What the Honorable TNC spokesperson is saying right now is the exact what Chandrababu Naidu ji said in 2019, and we all know what happened and the political fortunes what he has. It's too early to predict anything. What will happen to BJP? Yes, BJP, we are strong. Some we win, some we lose, but the time is still there. It's too early to predict what will happen because the opposition has a lot of PM aspirants. So good luck to them.
All right. So we'll see how this goes. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Well, joining us now, a very special guest, the former Foreign Secretary of India, Nirupama Rao. Thanks, ma'am, very much for being with us. What's the message that the US is trying to send us?
Thank you, Vishnu, for inviting me on your show. I think the overall and the underlying message from the visit of Secretary Blinken today was to stress the crucial and very durable nature of the Indo-US strategic partnership. It is true that he spoke to civil society representatives and the issue of democratic societies, human rights, the respect for diversity and pluralism, forming a more perfect union. And he mentioned it both in the context of American society as well as Indian society. So here my impression or my observation is that he spoke with a tone of humility. He just didn't voice those words. I think the body language also conveyed that. So there was nothing stentorian or dictatorial in what he had to say. That was my impression. And neither would I say that this issue was front and center of all that he did during the visit.
In fact, it probably wasn't. But it did come, it was there. It was mentioned in all of their press releases, including being brought up in the meeting with the Prime Minister. Would you consider it unusual, given the trajectory of the ties between the two countries, that there was this roundtable with civil society leaders in the morning, where there was a statement prior to that, where Blinken spoke about fundamental freedoms, the rule of the law, equality of opportunity, human dignity, freedom of religion and belief, media freedoms in this country? They didn't raise any specific concerns or specific issues, but the fact that this was all there in a statement before he even met the foreign secretary, the foreign minister, again, what would that potentially indicate?
I think in everything we do in international affairs today, there is also the issue of the domestic audience. And you're talking of the domestic audience in the United States when I refer to that. You have members of Congress from the Democratic Party who have, you know, been talking about these issues. It's important for the Biden administration to be seen as being sensitive to those concerns as they've been raised within Congress. And I think there is also a concern within the policymakers in the administration that this should not divide the bipartisan consensus that exists within the United States about the need for good Indo-US relations. So in a sense, I think this was a palliative measure as much as addressing Indian audiences.
Is there also a sense that this that our government will now have to change tack, change its strategy, and understand the underlying beliefs of the Biden government as far as democratic institutions and democracy and all of that is concerned? Because Blinken said that, you know, strategic ties, economic ties, all very well, but the bedrock is democratic institutions. Democracy.
Well, the bedrock is certainly democratic institutions, and I don't believe anybody in our government can dispute that also, because we constantly tell the rest of the world that we are proud of our diversity, we are proud of our plural society, we are proud of our electoral democracy. I think these are values that we constantly expound to the rest of the world. So I don't believe that, you know, this particular bringing up of the question of human rights or the question of, you know, dialogue within civil society should upset the foundations of this relationship. Because I'm through, as far as this visit is concerned, and they've had many meetings. Foreign Minister Jaishankar and Secretary Blinken, I think, had four meetings before this. And Mr. Blinken has made now a physical visit to India, which is a very positive development. So that is really the message, the crucial nature of this strategic partnership between two democratic societies. So the underpinning definitely is democracy, but it is also further strengthened and given meaning by the fact that we have this strategic interest in building a stronger and more resilient partnership within the region, within the Indo-Pacific, and across the whole spectrum of bilateral relations, which are multifaceted, as you know.
Does mention of all that we've been discussing, human rights, fundamental freedoms, equality of opportunity, human dignity, etc., does America bringing that up in these talks with Mr. Blinken, is that uncomfortable for New Delhi?
I think probably New Delhi was prepared for this. I don't believe it should have come as a surprise. There have been many previous manifestations of these concerns, if you may call them that. So in a sense, while preparing for the visit, I'm sure our policymakers in the Ministry of External Affairs must have known and must have had a foretelling of the fact that these issues would come up. So I don't believe it was a guerrilla move. I don't believe it was a surprise development. And I think New Delhi was prepared to answer those questions. And most importantly, what I've said all along is that between two mature, grown-up democracies such as ours, these issues constantly figure in the dialogue, in the conversation. And it is best, of course, that we avoid public spats on these issues. And certainly there was no public spat out there today. Talking about these in a sensible, measured, and in a listening mode is always important for democracies such as ours. And we can learn from each other. We can add value to the conversation just by that fact that we are prepared to understand what the other side is saying and to be able to respond to those concerns.
A final question to you. We've discussed Afghanistan today. Has India and the United States also comes on a day when 9 Taliban leaders met the Chinese foreign minister in Tianjin. You know, there were photographs everywhere. China is a common concern. We keep using the word concern tonight, don't we? China is a common problem, let's say, for both India and the United States. And now you've got China playing a more proactive role in Afghanistan. Does this upset the dynamics? And how do you believe that this is something that will figure, the China-Taliban link, in the equation that we enjoy with America?
Well, as far, looking at the pictures of the 9 Taliban descending on Tianjin today, I mean, you couldn't help feeling that it was like, you know, some horde had descended on Beijing like in the old days. I think China is looking out to preserve its own interests in Afghanistan. To what extent, you know, this reaching out to the Taliban is going to make that difference, you really don't know, because has the Taliban changed colors? Have they given up their support for extremism and terrorism? Yes, terrorism has been associated with them.
Right.
I think that question is still there. The jury is still out on that. And even China must realize that it is not going to be immune from that kind of those kinds of tendencies as explained by the Taliban, because Afghanistan is going into a period of enormous flux, even as we speak.
Right.
And there is every likelihood of a civil war there. So the scenario for all of us who are concerned about the future of Afghanistan, does not look good.
It's always wonderful speaking to you, ma'am. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this program. We're going to take a short break. Up after that, a little bit more with a small panel on the visit of the U.S. Secretary of State to India coming up, and then that big interview of Maya Sharma with the new Karnataka Chief Minister. Well, some news just coming in. We've been looking at the visit of the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, the focus of the U.S. Leaders, among other things, on freedom, equality, human rights. What exactly is that message all about? Well, he's met Prime Minister Modi, and there's a statement from the External Affairs Ministry on what the Prime Minister has had to say. The statement says, Prime Minister Modi said that the societies of the US and India share a deep commitment to the values of democracy, freedom and liberty, and the Indian diaspora in the US has contributed immensely to the enhancement of bilateral ties. So that's India's response to repeated messages from the United States on the need for India to preserve, and for the United States, the bedrock of their relationship, human rights, democracy, democratic institutions, the election process, etc., etc. Well, joining us now, Dr. A.K. Merchant. He's the National Trustee cum Secretary of the Lotus Temple. He was one of the civil society leaders invited by Mr. Blinken to be a part of that roundtable this morning, where human rights and other issues were looked at very closely, also joined by Ghanshyam Tiwari of the Samajwadi Party. Let me come across to you, Dr. A.K. Merchant. What were some of the questions that Antony Blinken asked the roundtable panelists?
Yeah, one correction. I'm not the secretary. I'm a national trustee, and I'm the general secretary.
Right.
Of the
so, could you answer the question, sir, on
yes,
what happened?
The question
over there
is: our focus was on inclusive development. So, you wanted to know how in India, in this during this period of pandemic, we have managed to provide for inclusive development. And as you know, the government of India has done a lot for the poorest of the poor, the last mile. The last person in the in this process of requiring assistance, rations, medical supplies, etc., etc. So his main concern was how also members of different religious communities or within the interfaith movement context, because India is a multicultural, multilingual, multi-religious society. So he invited just a select 6 or 7 of us to have this one-to-one dialogue. And each one, they contributed and shared what each community had been doing and how collectively also they had been pooling certain amount of resources and trying to support the initiative and the endeavors of the government for whatever they were doing for the citizens of the country. So in that context, I mentioned how many of the interfaith movement communities had been involved, as well as what the Baha'i community also had done. Because right from the guidance we received from our Supreme Governing Council last year, communities at the local, state, regional, and the national levels have been contributing to the welfare of the people, the most needy ones.
Right.
And
so, Dr. Merchant, was there no conversation on human rights in India? Was there no conversation on preserving democratic institutions? on the way laws had been used in the recent past in the country, for example, on sedition, the entire issue of dissent. Did any of that come up?
What came up was our shared democratic values.
Were there specific examples of concerns which any of you may have had or which the US leader may have had?
In terms of the shared democratic values, it was mentioned that both countries have their own challenges. And we, as members of different religious communities, we try to stay free from the political issues. We said that you have called us for discussing inclusive development, so let's focus on that.
Were there any specific concerns which were raised?
There were comments about changing scenario, but most of our discussions were all about values, all about how these two countries have got a long-standing relationship.
So by changing scenario, what do you mean, Dr. Merchant? What was the conversation on changing scenarios?
Well, changing scenario as a result of this pandemic.
Right.
Like, for instance, policies relating to supply of vaccines.
Right. There was no overt mention or discussion by anyone, Dr. Merchant, on human rights concerns and specific examples of that in India in the entire meeting which took place?
No, there was nothing about human rights as such. There was just one mention that to an extent, freedom of the press might have been affected because of this fake news, which is, of course, obviously a general concern. But as far as the other matters are concerned, we did not focus.
Okay.
We were more concerned with the spiritual context.
Got it.
And the religious community's contribution.
Let me go across to Ghanshyam Tiwari. Mr. Tiwari, how do you see this visit and the fact that, in as much as, you know, we've discussed Quad and Afghanistan and all of that, which we've been doing for a while, there was this overt mention of democracy. It's something we've taken for granted in the past. It's not something that's come up in as big a manner, right, at least publicly. Does that surprise you?
Well, good evening to you, to your viewers, and my fellow co-panelists. I think three things stand out very clearly. One is the U.S. really taking a new line compared to what a Trump administration would have done. And definitely this is a visit in the backdrop of how the Indian Prime Minister participated and thought that his popularity in India and U.S. has a bearing on the U.S. elections. So the shadow of Ab Ki Baat Trump Sarkar should not be missed. That said, U.S. is cautious that at the world stage, India is an important participant, and Prime Minister Modi is a very visible leader. So them just mentioning that they would make human rights a part of discussion is a direction to the Modi administration that the Trump line is not what will be celebrated with the Biden administration. My final point is, forever India will look at diversity, freedom, liberty, our democracy, harmony as a way of competitive power across the world. It's our soft power. Our democracy is our strength. Our diversity is our strength. That is how the world wants to engage with us. And every time that is diminished, there will be forces in the world who would want India not to diminish.
Right.
So I think the message is very clear that India must take its competitive strength more seriously than it is taking.
Mr. Srinivas, would you agree that it's time for the government to realize that they're dealing with a very different kettle of fish as compared to the Trump administration, one that prioritizes democracy and human rights perhaps more than what the Trump administration did?
Vishnu, I will go with the statement what Dr. S. Jaishankarji has given already. He's already said that we have strong convergence on the views of many regional concerns and work closely on multilateral global issues. This in crux tells about everything what happened in the entire meeting.
All right. So that's you'll refer to that statement of the foreign minister. I'll run short of time on this discussion. Important references to a plethora of issues linked to human rights over here. But I think the point that was mentioned is that the way in which it was mentioned was not to look down on India or to give directions, but to suggest that India and the United States both needed to strengthen their democratic institutions and processes. Well, Basav Raj Bommai was sworn in as the new Chief Minister of Karnataka with the blessings of his predecessor, B.S. Yediyurappa. an MLA from Shigaon in central Karnataka's Haveri district, Mr. Gommai, is a politically powerful Lingayat leader like Mr. Yediyurappa and was among his close confidants. Speaking to NDTV, Mr. Gommai said that it's a huge responsibility and there's a lot that he now needs to do. My colleague Maya Sharma spoke to him.
We're in the home of Basavaraj Bommai, the next Chief Minister of Karnataka. Now, that's not many people who can actually say that. So what are your emotions at this time?
The emotion is of responsibilities. Knowing very well the present situation of both COVID and floods, and due to COVID for last 1.5 years, the economic challenges the state is relaying. Shadow of Yediyurappa, such a tall leader, and immediately after him taking over, his shadow will be there.
Hard act to follow.
His guidance and under his able guidance, I'll be able to solve a lot of problems. That's also a positive thing. But however, the economic challenges are very high. I have already started speaking to central leaders. And I have spoken to finance minister also. Very soon we have to tackle all these issues. And my first priority is floods and COVID.
COVID.
And then streamline the administration. And the next priority will be to implement all the budgetary programs which have been announced by the Honorable Yediyurappa. And take everybody along and bring a new zeal of energy into the people, especially the downtrodden people. A lot of hopes are there. So we want to make all those hopes come true. So 24/7 is my motto. I think 24 hours is very less for me.
Very little. Taking over, of course, ahead of an expected wave of COVID, yeah. Like you said, that's it's a very big challenge.
Yes. Certainly, we are in midst of second and third wave expecting. Hopefully, there will be no third wave.
Yes.
In the eventuality, we have to be ready for it. We are under the able guidance of Yediyurappa ji, we have done a lot of work during COVID 1 and 2. And he has involved me in tackling COVID in so much that we have learnt a lot of new administrative measures to tackle the COVID at this juncture.
The second wave
Come handy to tackle the third wave.
Second wave was very tough here.
Second wave was very, very tough. A lot of deaths have been taken place. And a lot of pressure on the health infrastructure. So we are all aware of it. So tomorrow itself, I am going to have a meeting of all senior bureaucrats.
Tomorrow itself, starting off with this itself.
Yes.
Now, when did you first know that it was going to be you, Basavaraj Bommai, as Chief Minister?
It was only in the evening because ultimately all the reports were there to Parliamentary Board, and just before the legislatures met,
yes.
The observers, Dharmendra Pradhan ji and Arun ji and Aruna ji, they had come and they discussed in the core committee. As soon as the core committee was over, I was indicated.
Oh, okay.
So,
right. You did have an idea then?
Very, very few minutes earlier. I had kept my fingers crossed.
You had, it was quite honestly an ambition of yours. You did want to become Chief Minister.
No, it is not an ambition. I never expected to be a Chief Minister this tenure.
Okay.
Because such a tall and big leader of Yediyurappa,
yes.
And we never expected him to resign so fast.
Yes.
So that was not there. But however, after his resignation, a lot of things, political developments had taken place. And it culminated into high command to put faith in me, in spite of coming from the other party for about 12 years back.
Yes, you were
But of course, all the 12 years I've been a very sincere party man.
Okay.
So that paid off. They have reposed such a faith. I should keep the faith and not let down the people of Karnataka and my high command.
Why did they choose you? It's a question which will involve a mix of putting aside modesty and being honest as well. Why do you think they chose you?
Probably in this given situation, they have given top priority for the administration. And clean administration and toning up the entire governance as well as coordination with the party. Because we have to prepare ourselves for 2023 and 2024. So a lot of work to be done. Okay. So we have to be politically correct as well as administratively correct. So they think that I will do that correct job.
Of course, the caste question, many people assume a Lingayat leader has left, another leader from the Lingayat community has taken over. Was caste really a factor?
I what personally feel is nobody can give application and be born in particular caste. So that is not there. But how we conduct ourselves? If we really serve the all sections of the society and give a social justice, then all the caste people say that he is mine. That is my motto.
That is your motto, to belong to every single caste. Now, honestly speaking, there is also a concern over the rise of divisive politics, of division in the country. Yediyurappa has been seen as a moderate leader. Would you like to reassure anyone who might be concerned about BJP rule in Karnataka?
See, I don't believe in all this divisive and all thing. For me, nationalism is highest priority. And to maintain the integrity, sovereignty and unity of this country, if certain strong measures are taken, they were not taken, and it is for the good of the country, I don't hesitate to do it. So, whatever the people say, but my conscience says that what is good for the state and what is good for the country, I don't hesitate to do it.
If I could ask, are minorities safe in Karnataka? Do you have any message for them?
Certainly, minorities are part of Karnataka. Mm-hmm. And Karnataka has been a very communal harmony state. Mm-hmm. And that tradition is there. And as a home minister, I assured that all cross-sections, not only minorities, all cross-sections of the people, all sections of the people are safe and they are secured. And justice is done for him whenever it is necessary.
What role will B.S. Yediyurappa play in your administration? Will you turn to him often for advice? What role do you see him?
He has already said that he is a mentor. And with his vast experience of his administration, he is a boon to me. Mm. And I'll certainly take his vast experience. And that's the guidance he has assured me. And I am sure that I'll take his guidance in all the important issues, and he is there like a fatherly figure for me to guide and to handhold also.
Speaking of fatherly figures, your own father was a chief minister of Karnataka. You're keeping it in the family. It must be a moment of such pride, really.
Yeah. My father was a raised, and he was a man of principles, and he fought for that, and even he didn't care for his chair, and he stood by his principles. He has set a very high standard. So my challenge is to keep up to the high standard.
To live up to that, yes. Because you've grown up in politics, really.
Secondly, he has taken both victory and losses with the certain principles.
Yes.
So he was never elated or he was never in a very sober mood whenever he has lost or whenever he has won. With equanimity, he had taken his life. I tried to do that.
That is something you've learned from him. You want to do that as well, definitely. Now, you've held a whole series of portfolios, irrigation, home, until now, until this big post. What has been the favorite post that you've held so far?
See, it's a difficult question because each one is a new challenge. Each one is a different challenge.
Yes.
Irrigation, I could achieve a lot in terms of irrigating lands.
Okay.
750,000 acres was irrigated under my regime.
Yes.
With the help of Yediyurappa. And as a home minister, it is one of the period where crimes were very less, and whatever crime happened, it was checked immediately.
Okay.
And I have brought in a lot of efficiency. I have brought in a lot of reforms to the police. So both are equally good. So I think one should not have a choice about portfolios.
Anything is good.
Anything is good and anything is challenging. And sincere efforts in facing the challenges brings in a new zeal, new energy, new dimension, even for the very, very so-called not-so-good portfolios.
Not-so-good portfolios also. And what are you looking forward to most as Chief Minister? Something that will make you very happy as Chief Minister. What are you looking forward to?
If Karnataka is number one in the entire country, as far as socially, economically, culturally, educationally, if it is number one, I'll be the happiest person.
And we see your lovely family here also. We see that your lovely family is also waiting to get a minute of your time. And what does it mean for your private life? Because you've been in public life all along, but I can see a lot of laughter here. What does it mean for private life?
No, I think Dad has handled it really well. He has always like put family first.
Yeah, ma'am.
And I think he'll still do that.
You will do that as well.
Yeah.
So you will be able to balance everything as well.
Yeah, yeah. Family is very dear to me. Even though I am not able to give much time, they always be there with me.
Absolutely.
Even in my work, they'll be inspiring me.
They will be there. Thank you so much, sir. All the very, very best for your term.
And I must say that I'm very lucky to have such a family, such a great family, lovely family.
That is so nice. That is so nice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. So Karnataka's Minister there, Basavaraj Bommai, take over from B.S. Yediyurappa, talking about his challenges, his hopes, his dreams, and his family will be there with him all the way. With D.M. Kumar, Maya Sharma in Bengaluru for NDTV.